CEOs are facing the most challenging business environment in decades, with inflation, price volatility, and geopolitical tension all impacting daily decisions and impinging long-term planning. Not only must they navigate through today's headwinds, in many cases they need to dramatically improve their company's ESG performance. The ambitious targets in the Sustainable Development Goals are just 7 years away, and the science is clear that on climate change, we're moving too slowly. How are CEOs right now thinking about the biggest challenges to their business, and where does sustainability fit into their agenda? I'm Adam Green, a technology writer. In the past, I've written for media including the Financial Times and Economist Impact. Welcome to episode 5 of Sustainability Powered by Technology, a podcast series from Accenture. In today's episode, we're going to discuss the findings of Accenture's latest CEO survey and what they tell us about the place of sustainability in the C-suite right now, and how technology is or isn't playing its fullest role in driving the sustainability agenda. I'm thrilled to be joined by two Accenture experts for today's episode. Casey Wells is North America Products Client Group Lead and a Senior Managing Director, leading Accenture's business in the Northeast US. She's focused on companies in the life sciences, consumer goods and services, retail, industrial, mobility, and travel and hospitality industries. Michael Hughes is a sustainability strategy and technology director who is also partnerships lead with the UN, overseeing a portfolio of programs across 100 countries. Casey and Michael, welcome to you both. Casey, let's start with you. You've been with Accenture since 1994, so you've seen a lot of ups and downs in the business cycle over that period. How difficult would you say today's environment is compared to the past?
Thanks for having us, Adam. Look, I think today's environment is absolutely a time of great uncertainty. Our CEOs are facing a slate of complex global challenges, everything from inflation and trade regulation, supply chain impacts, talent scarcity, climate change, the list really goes on and on. Accenture has developed a global disruption index. And we measure a composite of different factors, including economic, social, geopolitical climate, consumer, and even technology disruption. And we've looked and estimated that the macroeconomic volatility since 2017 is over 200%. And that's compared to only a 4% disruption rate between 2011 and 2016. So what we're seeing today is an unprecedented amount of volatility that CEOs are having to manage through. And while they always have to deal with macroeconomic issues, the scale, the number, and the complexity right now really does make today feel very different than past business cycles I've seen.
Michael, turning to you, you recently led the Accenture and UN Global Compact CEO survey, which took the pulse of corporate leaders. It polled over 2,600 CEOs across 128 countries, 18 industries, and you also interviewed some of these participants. What picture did they paint in terms of the mood and outlook of CEOs right now?
Absolutely, yeah, and thanks for having us. I would say this is an interesting one. This partnership goes back over 15 years. So we have quite a bit of longitudinal data when it comes to this particular study. The participation rate this year was over 2.5 times what we normally get. Typically, we get about 1,000 CEOs, and this year we got over 2,600. And I think that really reflects the CEO's commitment to sustainability and really their level of engagement. That spike is quite, I think, reflective of that. We also got such a well-representative view across the world, where we got really equal representation from the global north, the global south, all the different industries. So we really heard a lot of different voices when it came to this study. In terms of mood, I would say it was definitely a bit overwhelmed. 93% of the CEOs we spoke to are dealing with 10 or more distinct challenges across talent, public health, climate, supply chain disruptions. And a lot of those are starting to span beyond what we would consider the traditional business boundaries. So they're having to flex into new areas where they're a little bit more uncomfortable or unfamiliar. So I think CEOs are having a little bit of trouble dealing with that and just feeling the overwhelming nature of all the different issues they're being called to address. But I think despite that mood, they're still very committed to sustainability. I remember one discussion with an energy CEO out of Europe where say that's a very dynamic market at the moment, given the challenges they're facing, but that the current situation is more of a blip than a huge impactful disruption where we're on this long trajectory towards a more sustainable future. So we just have to continue on that trajectory and we'll eventually realize that more sustainable, equitable, just future we all hope for.
That's encouraging news because one of the worries at the moment is that in a period of instability in geopolitics, sustainability might become demoted down the agenda. One of the striking data points is that sustainability efforts have been hampered by this geopolitical environment that we're in. How worried should we be about this?
I'd say we should definitely be concerned about it. 87% of CEOs felt that it was currently disrupting our ability to achieve the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So quite high and quite impactful. And I would say there's also a very distinct set of challenges when it comes to geopolitics, Ukraine being the most prominent at the moment and the number of challenges that have stemmed from that. But we're seeing it in a lot of different forms around the world, whether that's fraught democratic transitions in the US, Brazil, Nigeria, large-scale protests in different countries such as France recently, or even just the general economic tensions that have existed for quite a long time between China and the West. And I think business will typically seek out stability and try and find a way to navigate through this disruption. But unfortunately, it's taking up a lot of time and attention that we would otherwise like to focus on other pressing issues, climate, poverty, other topics. So I think those are all quite challenging when it comes to the geopolitical environment. And unfortunately, we just don't see a lot of signs of that abating anytime soon.
Was there anything that surprised you in the data that came back? Anything that you weren't expecting?
I would say actually something that came up, not from the data, but actually from those CEO interviews we did. We conducted over 130 with companies big and small, every industry all over the world. And one topic that came up somewhat unprompted was the theme of equity. I'd say this is particularly true in industries like healthcare, food, energy, where CEOs really feel this pressure around the widening social inequalities we're seeing. They're feeling this pull to really jump in there and try and help solve that in the best way they can in the absence of action from other players. We see this in healthcare where people are trying to get access to different medicines, food insecurity with rising inflation costs is becoming an increasing concern. And so the theme of equity really came up much more prominently than we expected.
Casey, where would you say sustainability as an issue is right now for CEOs in terms of prioritization compared to the past? And how are your clients talking about this issue at the moment?
I think sustainability continues to be absolutely central to the agenda of most of the CEOs we're talking to. And, you know, what's great is it's not just because they are driving towards some kind of regulatory requirement or policy requirement or target. It's really because, and what I'm hearing from the CEOs is that they know that driving sustainability in their businesses is going to lead to a resilient business, is going to actually help them with their business continuity. And when you think about what they're having to deal with today, the issues that they're facing, if they start to move from sustainability being sort of a bolt-on, if you will, a single department in their organization, to something that's really embedded throughout the enterprise, really thinking about how do you drive sustainability through every process, every capability, that's what helps them to secure their supply chain, secure their talent, secure their customers. And that really then turns to driving economic business. So I think what we're seeing CEOs realize and act upon is that sustainability is not just good for the planet, of course it is, but it's also necessary for the long-term growth of their businesses and their overall health.
Michael, what's your impression of a best practice for making sure that sustainability isn't this challenge where it's managed by a single department and it's somewhat to the side of the business? Do you think it's truly embedded now across the enterprise, and where are we in that journey?
I think a lot of organizations have the aspiration to have it truly embedded across the enterprise, but we're still kind of in this early experimentation stage where companies are building up their internal knowledge and memory when it comes to sustainability. So I think we're seeing it in particular parts of the business. In the report, we focused around two big areas, the workforce and supply chain. I think we're seeing a lot of momentum there, partly due to the pressures CEOs are facing. So 96% of CEOs are dealing with talent scarcity. The battle for the workforce is quite strong. So they're taking a few different actions. Actually, if we look across the entire set of resilience actions we identified in the research, reskilling and upskilling was the top one across every industry and every category. And that is not just, you know, technology skills, that is, you know, more traditional trades, a number of different diverse sets of skills that they just can't get access to. But we're also seeing investments in physical and mental health coming out of the pandemic, really trying to take care of the workforce, as well as trying to build workforces that more reflect the communities in which they operate. So trying to bring in that diversity, equity, and inclusion angle. On the supply chain side, we have all had to navigate the last few years supply chain challenges in our daily lives, and CEOs are not immune from that. So that has really become core to sustainability strategy holistically. So we're seeing CEOs think about expanding data across the value chain and really trying to collect different data points from their suppliers, with a particular emphasis around understanding the social impact, so human rights and other challenges that might exist across the value chain. And then in light of a lot of those geopolitical challenges we were discussing, over a third of CEOs are already looking into diversification, duplication of the various elements within their supply chain to try and build up that resilience. So I'd say we're starting to see that in pockets, and there's an aspiration to really see it embedded, but we're still really on that journey.
Given the challenges that CEOs are facing, a lot of pressure is obviously coming from their stakeholders, whether it be consumers, investors, and even regulators. What are some of the ways that companies are dealing with that pressure? And as a follow-on question for that, you touched the point earlier on sort of data and technology. This is going to be a key tool to actually be able to navigate this environment.
I think from a stakeholder's perspective, again, we've been looking at this particular question for quite a while. Historically, we've seen customers and employees always pretty much near the top. They're always kind of in the battle for one and two. But that third and fourth place spot has really flexed quite a bit, especially in the last 4 to 5 years, I would say, where we saw quite a rise in the investor community. They've become much more involved, especially as we think about climate risks and how that's starting to impact the overall business. So they've become quite influential. And in particular, I would say this last year, we saw the rise of governments come up to be the third most influential stakeholder. And I often get asked kind of like, why is that? And I think ultimately that bond between the private and the public sector has gotten a lot closer. Through the pandemic, we've seen the life sciences sector really have to work closely with government in terms of the vaccine development. When it comes to the crisis in Ukraine, we saw a lot of coordinated action between the private sector and governments, whether it was in response to sanctions or other actions that were being taken by respective governments. So that bond between the private and public sector and then understanding that they have to work together to achieve these aims is becoming a little bit clearer, I think, and those lines of communication are becoming stronger ultimately when we think about stakeholders.
Casey, how does that chime with your experience in terms of this tightening relationship between the stakeholders, especially across public and private?
Yeah, I think we're seeing that across the board. And, you know, as companies continue to try to lean into understanding the their responsibilities towards achieving these sustainability goals and trying to make sure they're being not only aware and contributing to the business environment and making sure they're taking care of their stakeholders internally and their investors who are supporting their business agenda, they must also pay attention to the social agenda and engage with public and private partnerships to achieve their goals.
A question for both of you, which is about really where technology comes into play with all of this. Michael, starting with you, given all of the challenges that CEOs are facing, to what extent are they leveraging technology that's out there today to navigate both the immediate business challenges, but also addressing these longer term sustainability goals? There's a lot on their plate, and obviously they need all of the tools that they can get. The technology stack has gotten much more impressive in the last 5-10 years, especially with what we're seeing now with AI and the AI revolution. What's the attitude of CEOs towards the extent to which technology is now able to help them really move the needle on some of these issues?
Yeah, I think they certainly recognize the possibilities of technologies to help address some of these challenges. A couple that come to mind for me from the discussions we were having with the CEOs was one around scenario analysis. So trying to use tools to understand how they can navigate the various challenges and planning for the adjustments. I think we can't possibly foresee all the different challenges that have come to our way in the last few years, but trying to plan as best you can and having those contingencies in place is really something that I think CEOs are much more mindful of. And so trying to use scenario tools to plan for that has certainly risen to the top. You mentioned AI. That came up quite a bit in our discussions. Certainly ChatGPT and other things have emerged in the last few weeks. But I'd say more broadly, trying to think through how you use AI to streamline operations, think through some of those more challenging topics, think about how you design products and services differently. But on the flip side, I would say there is a recognition that there are a lot of ethical implications around AI. We had, again, those conversations around equity with a lot of CEOs. They understand the risks when it comes to bias and discrimination that can exist in certain models around artificial intelligence. So I'd say those are two technologies in particular that jumped out to me. But in totality, when we think about technology, what has kind of come to bear is that partnerships is really key to this. No one technology or no one company can really solve this. So there was a great understanding around how you have to work between sectors and across sectors to really realize the potential of technology when it comes to sustainability, because we're still early on in that journey and trying to build the tools to meet the challenges at hand.
Yeah, I would say, Michael, that that last point is important, that we're still in really early days. And that we see a number of companies who are still just trying to get the basics right, trying to get the fundamentals down. So, you know, the focus right now tends to be for many companies just trying to get good quality data that, you know, can be standardized across the value chain so they can make sense of it and use that data for decision making. And, you know, a number of companies are still trying to figure out how can they leverage platforms that already exist in their environment today, whether it be an ERP system or Salesforce and CRM, like how do they use that to just digitize their processes and think about, you know, coming back to embedding sustainability across the enterprise, thinking about how they use that as they transform their organizations and drive efficiencies like the transition to cloud.
We've talked there about, as you say, integration. That's a big challenge. Are there any other common themes in terms of what's holding CEOs back from realizing the full benefits of technology? Obviously, the ethics and the governance side, Michael, you touched on. I think that's an important one. Integration is another. Any other themes that are coming through either in the survey, Michael or Casey, through your interactions with CEOs, common pain points? Michael, we'll start with you.
So I'd say one of the things that came out in the research in particular was, you know, obviously we have a variety of technologies, a lot of challenges that exist within the technology itself, but we were particularly interested in trying to understand across different regions, was there a disparity that existed in terms of access or ability to finance certain technologies? And unfortunately, we did see quite a disparity between what we call the global north and the global south when it came to technology access. Despite the fact that actually CEOs in the global south were more committed statistically to sustainability than CEOs in the global north, they really are struggling with access to these different tools, whether it's just getting the technology itself, educating their employees and bringing in the right skills to deploy and maintain them. So we're unfortunately seeing a gap where in the places where we really need the most commitment to sustainability and the most action in terms of protection and advancement, we're not seeing the tools really flow in that direction. So there's really a need when we think about technology transfer to not necessarily, again, not to just give it away, but to really think meaningfully and thoughtfully about how we give these different markets access to technologies that do exist. We're just not deploying them at the scale we need and in the markets in which we need them. So in order to realize like the sustainable development goals, I think we need to be very thoughtful about how we ensure that financial transfer, the technology transfer, skills, it all has to kind of come together. So I think when we have this discussion, thinking about that distribution globally is quite an important element.
Yeah. And Michael, when I think about that, I think you're really hitting on, you know, so how do we invest in these technologies in these small, medium enterprises and the global south who may not have access to the funding and capability needed to drive this? And one great example that I came across recently was a global snacking giant who has invested now in crop and plot analytics technologies to help farmers with their yield and quality production, which will then reduce waste, it manages soil biodiversity. And, you know, typically these independent farmers that they work with to get raw materials don't have the capacity to invest in these types of capabilities. And so by having this large company be able to lean in with dashboards and analytics to give to these farmers in hand in the field, it just creates a new flow of better product, more quality product, reduced waste, and really just sort of changes the game for those companies that cannot afford currently to invest in these capabilities nor have the potentially the talent on hand. But it helps the long-term value chain. So I think these partnerships that Michael talked about are absolutely critical in going up and down the value chain.
Another question for both of you then. Are there any specific technologies or innovations that you think might have the biggest potential impact on sustainability right now? Michael?
Oh, that's a really tough choice. As a technologist, there are so many exciting ones out there and so much emerging tech almost every day. But I think for me, maybe I'll highlight a couple things that come to mind. In the research in particular, you know, we looked at, again, that theme of equity. And Bristol Myers Squibb was a case study we featured when they think about equity in clinical trials. So really trying to make sure that they're thoughtfully developing those clinical trials to make sure the communities in which they are participating in them are actually reflective of the places where that medicine would ultimately be used. So trying to make sure they're diversifying that sample set to make doing be more inclusive, be more representative of the communities where they're ultimately operating. So again, that's kind of having that in the back of the mind as you're developing new products and services, really embedding it in those overall kind of core business processes. The other thing I would say, you know, to the conversation earlier, to Casey's point around getting the basics right, you know, sometimes when it comes to the technology, they don't always have to be flashy. When we think about small and medium enterprises who are pretty resource constrained or operating with kind of limited staff, sometimes you just have to rely on those more traditional tools around learning and trying to think about when you're mobilizing these big value complex value chains and supply chains, getting those small and medium enterprises engaged and really moving towards climate action or human rights action is challenging. So sometimes you just need core e-learning tools that we've had for years and deploying those at scale. So I think it's a combination of deploying the new and exciting and flashy ones, but also trying to make sure we're really using some of those core ones we've perfected over years to just make sure they're being used by as many people as possible.
Casey, what about you? What are some of the technologies that you're most optimistic about in this sustainability domain specifically?
Yeah, and I really start to point to where businesses can help other businesses. That partnership concept we talked about and sort of how this ecosystem is coming together. You know, Ecolab is, I think, an interesting company to point to in some of the innovations that they've brought to market. They have something called the Ecolab Water for Client Solution. And if you're not familiar with Ecolab, they're a global leader in waste, hygiene, and infection prevention. And so this Water for Climate Solution really does combine multiple capabilities across consulting and engineering, advanced chemistry, digital technology, auditing. And so they bring all these together to help companies think about water reduction, water reuse, recycling strategies across their entire enterprise. And because when you think about water itself, in order for it to be used for commercial consumption and use, it's got to be moved, it's got to be heated, it's got to be cooled, it's got to be treated. These all require energy. And so if we can create strategies that or give strategies to companies to help them reduce, reuse, and recycle, we are ultimately requiring less energy use, which then ultimately requires reductions or results in reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. So Ecolab has really helped companies achieve their net zero goals through better water management. And in just this last year, they've reported 215 billion gallons of water saved and 3.6 billion metric tons of greenhouse gases saved. So that's huge potential to change the world.
We touched earlier on this point that businesses are looking at sustainability, not just as a compliance requirement, as it were, but part of the strategy. But obviously, the enabling environment, the policy environment is really important in shaping incentives, in providing a level playing field, and in creating the right structures. What would you say, both of you, are the key asks from the business community and the CEO community from policymakers and regulators to help them on their journey? Michael, maybe we can start with you, especially through the interview program around the survey. I wondered if this was something where there were any clear or recurring themes that came through on the governance side.
Yeah, I think through the report, we explored a lot of different policymaker asks. And again, it's policy tends to be both local and global in a lot of ways. So I think part of the challenge is we have a lot of different policy asks in different regions. So that's part of the challenge. But you know, we cover everything from thinking through a global biodiversity framework, which we were fortunate to get at COP15. We have various elements around climate, whether it's financing for the Global South or you know, trying to think through more established things like carbon pricing. But ultimately, I think one of the challenges we're facing, you know, as a result of the geopolitics, some of these tensions that exist between various markets, is that the disparate frameworks we've got are really hindering a lot of different elements around the sustainability agenda. Whether it is our ability to deploy technologies due to trade regulations, the financing piece, and just in terms of currently what we've seen recently with some of the financial sector really struggling in different regards due to rising interest rates, it's really just proving to be quite a challenge. It's enormously time consuming for a lot of organizations to have to deal with these various reporting schemes, especially for multinationals. It can be quite cost prohibitive in a lot of ways to have to do a lot of this reporting, and it takes away really time, energy, and just like the headspace to give thought to other issues. You know, if you're constantly spending time making sure that you're reporting to this framework and that framework, it's time you're not spending thinking about like, how do we embed sustainability in our supply chain or into our R&D process? So I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening, but the current global framework is, while aspirationally quite good, we're trying to do the right thing and we're experimenting in different markets. We are seeing it somewhat hinder actually the sustainability progress we ultimately need.
Yeah, I would say adding to that a little bit, Michael, the just trying to get to a common set of definitions, a common set of measurements. I mean, that's really where companies are struggling today, to get some kind of apples to apples comparison of progress that we're making and really making sense of our results. And I think if we can get to that kind of common framework, that standardized regulatory reporting, it's going to drive a whole new level of transparency, where we can see where success has been achieved and we can look for opportunities that exist for improvement. It'll make it easier to share best practices, and I think ultimately ease the implementation of reporting. So that's going to drive more confidence in the results that we're seeing across companies. And, you know, that'll all be backed by, you know, having it just a common language that we can all speak to in terms of definitions and measures.
Well, Casey, Michael, thank you so much to both of you. And thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us for this new episode. If you have any feedback or questions about this podcast or the topics we've discussed, please email us. And all the details of today's conversation will be in the show notes. See you next time.